Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And Russell is amongst millions of men and women who have found that they are compulsively acting on things that they don't want. And this can be terribly, terribly difficult. You know, call it sexual hypersexuality. Call it sexual addiction. Call it obsessive compulsive behavior. It matters not. The bottom line is that it's behavior that seems uncontrollable, and it's very, very difficult to stop without some structured support. And I would love to tell you that that structured support comes in an ABC formula, but it really doesn't. You know, what I mean by that is that you have to change your life to support recovery. It's like any other addiction. Hey, I'm Carol the Coach, a.k.a. Carol Jorgensen Sheets, and I'm here to help you with your sexual addiction. And I know it's tough. We're the only sexual addiction show on iTunes that help people figure out where they need to go next in life. And you know, I interview the experts. And tonight, I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Michael Barta. He is the founding director of the Colorado Sexual Recovery Center in Boulder, Colorado. And this facility is an intensive outpatient treatment center for people suffering from sexual addiction and for partners affected by sexual addiction. You know, he's been working exclusively with this population and has found that roughly 98% of people are suffering from sexually compulsive behaviors and that they also have significant attachment wounds. So after he saw this trend for a while, he began studying how attachment affects our brains and our future ability to connect with other people. Sex addiction has long been recognized as an intimacy disorder, meaning that people that suffer from sexual addiction have a very difficult time allowing others into their inner world. They lack the ability to be vulnerable. They lack the ability to trust. They lack the ability to form meaningful relationships that go very deep. So tonight he's going to be speaking to us about the formation of intimacy disorder and the trouble that addicts have with vulnerability and intimacy. I can't wait to interview him because he's going to be talking about the brain and how it works, how it's wired to connect, how it is affected and impacted by intimate interaction or lack thereof, and how addiction is a way of life to escape and manage pain, and getting sober, working on recovery, has different elements to it. So that's what he's going to be talking about. And, you know, I say like you all, I've got about 130,000 listeners, and that is amazing. And as I have all of you listening from all over the world, I also know that we're all learning together. You've heard me say it before. We are pioneers in this field. Not that sexual addiction hasn't been around forever, but this form of sexual addiction with the internet makes it affordable, accessible, and anonymous. And that adds a whole new element to the field of addiction. And, you know, I guess the good news is that there are lots of opportunities for you to work through your addiction because support groups are available. Certified sexual addiction therapists are available. This show is available. I mean, there are people all over the country and the world that have specialized skills. They're amazing. And this show's going to teach you about them. It's going to expose you to who might be the best person to handle your situation. And if you don't know, if you know you're listening to this show for the first time and you have a specific problem, I'm here to tell you that you can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com, and I will be happy to find out the answers to your questions to the best of my ability, find out maybe what workshops are available close to you, or what's the best workshop available. You know, there are lots of good ones. There's never really a best. But I got to tell you, there are people in this field that are amazing. And you might as well listen to the show. Email me, again, at carolthecoach@aol.com, to get the kind of information that you need that you may not have access to. You may not know how to gain access to, because, you know, when you Google something, 15 names come up, 15 services. Some of them aren't even appropriate. Okay, now, I don't know about you, but I've got to apologize right off the bat. I'll probably get kicked off of Blog Talk, but I got to tell you something. I know you're inundated with ads and information and images that are sexually explicit in nature. If you're a sex addict, you see it every time you open your eyes. You can't walk down the street without seeing it. You see it on billboards. You see it on buildings. You see it on TV. You see it in life. Well, tonight I was signing in to Blog Talk, and they had very sexually explicit ads for gaming. And it made me sick to my stomach because I thought, if my listening audience is seeing this same thing, I'm hoping you aren't, because I'm in the studio, you are not. But I thought, I can't wait to call tomorrow and to complain and voice my concerns and say, I want that crap off of my flipping studio. So, you know, if you are accessing me through Blog Talk or iTunes, and if an inappropriate ad comes up that you think is sexually explicit in nature, please email me, and I will convey your complaint. And if it isn't, good for you. But I just thought, how ironic that, you know, this kind of stuff comes up at every corner. We know that. That's why partners are so traumatized. I mean, they can't move around without seeing these things. And, of course, they know their husbands or wife are seeing them. It's just absolutely pathetic. And I told you a long time ago that the computer age was developed from pornography, and that people are exposed to pornography, they actually watch it between the times of 9 to 5 during the day. It's not something that is more prevalent at night. This is so that you all have access during the day. And, you know, we have created a very addictive society. You know, when I was talking with a producer of movies, he said, you know, we are supposed to change scenes every 6 seconds because people get bored with regular dialogue. They get bored with regular scenery, and we have to keep them captivated. Well, what I know to be true is that means they need to keep the brain stimulated to such a degree that you're constantly looking for that next fix, that next frame, that next action scene. I believe we're going to swing back. That's what I think. But in the meantime, our generation, our children's generation, and our children's children's generation is going to have to deal with this exploitation. And I feel very grateful that we're going to get to work together to combat this pervasive problem. So welcome to Being a Pioneer. You're joining Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and we are going to work on this together. You're never alone, and that's what I am so thankful for. Okay, so now you know that I work with people individually and in families and in groups, and I've often said that not only are you traumatized as the addict, but so are the partners and their families, and there's never one right or wrong answer in doing this work, but I got to tell you, most oftentimes I see people that really want to change. You wouldn't be listening to this show if you didn't want to change. And that's what I am so thankful for, that there is this desire to work through the addiction, and oftentimes that requires that you absolutely change your life to support a variety of tools. And those tools may look like things that you may already be doing in your life. You know, if you're a healthy individual, hopefully you are exercising your body. And if you're a healthy individual, hopefully you are exercising your brain. Too many people veg on the couch, just watching TV, debriefing from a very stressful day. Tonight I was talking to an addict, a recovering addict, that said, you know, Carol, it is so prevalent that when I was into pornography, I would hyperfixate on porn and go into an altered state. I'd hyperfocus and I wouldn't know anything else around me. There was a lot of time distortion. I didn't know that I was spending 20 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes, 3 hours and 20 minutes. I was sucked in. And if we look at regular behavior, there are lots of things that can suck us in like that. And so you have to have the recovery tools necessary to change that. And that means that you may want to attend a 12-step group. You may want to get a sponsor. You may want to develop fellowship. You want to may make the calls. You will want to do recommended readings that are sexual recovery in nature. Those five things are imperative, as is getting to a certified sexual addictions therapist. That's important. Maybe attending an intensive outpatient workshop, possibly going to a residential treatment center if you just don't seem to be able to kick it. And there are lots of other things, prayer and meditation and many things available to you, but you've got to employ them all at one time. As Patrick Carnes says, You are not stronger than your addict, but along with fellowship, with 12-step, with recommended readings, with good therapists, with hospitalizations, residential treatment, intensive outpatient settings, you can kick this. Now, tonight, again, I said that I am going to be introducing and interviewing Dr. Michael Barta, and he is recognized as an attachment specialist. So, Dr. Barta, welcome to the call.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can. Hey, you have
Great.
Made it your mission to understand sexual addiction and intimacy disorders and attachment disorders and how that affects the brain. So tell me, why did you initially get involved in this work?
Well, I initially got into working with sexual addiction after recovering from my own sexual addiction. So I found out that, you know, I was already a psychologist that was practicing and mm-hmm. got into some trouble, the law soliciting prostitution, and it was a pretty big wake-up call for me, and I decided to go to treatment, and I did, and after about a year of recovery and 12-step work and things like that, I called up the Institute of International Institute of Trauma and Addiction Professionals, which is Pat Carnes' organization, told them my story and asked if I could do the training, and the rest is history.
What I'm always telling people on the radio show, because we have actually over 130,000 listeners across the world, and I say counselors are very, very good, but truly, if you want to get the most efficient help, you've got to go to somebody who has studied this extensively, and that's a CSAT, a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist. So not only did you become a therapist, but now you're a supervisor, correct?
Yes, ma'am. I did some extra training, and now I'm able to help other beginning CSATs get their hours and learn more experience, get some more experience, and then they can become certified sex addiction therapists themselves.
Well, I love the fact that you have really studied this behavior in addition to how it affects the brain and how the brain then affects the addiction. So tell me, would you share a little bit about the importance of the brain in your work with sexual addiction?
Yeah, and in 2011, we kind of got a little bit of a bonus from the American Society of Addiction Medicine, and they came out and they basically verified that, according to their stance, that sex can be addictive. And what they started looking at was they said it was a brain disorder, and it was, with all addictions, it's to be found within the brain and within the emotions. So I started working with this population in 2000, and I noticed, and I've done some of my own statistics on it, about 98% of the people that I've worked with also concurrently have damaged attachment, meaning that their families of origin were less than nurturing. And so I really started looking into that and decided maybe there's an avenue to pursue here as a form of treatment rather than just helping people get sober. It's more about getting to the core of the problem, because in my belief, if I take care of the core, then the need to act out, the compulsions are going to diminish.
Okay, so when you say that, you then are indicating that as the needs diminish, then you're more able to set up a situation where you have normal recovery and normal experiences, less urges and cravings, and you begin to feel more balanced. The brain changes, doesn't it?
That's right. So, you know, when we look at the brain, what we're saying it has a job, okay? And uh-huh. the brain's job is to basically keep us alive. And when we don't get the adequate, when we don't have our needs met adequately when we're, you know, in early life,
uh-huh.
then what, you know, research is showing that there's actually damage to the brain. It means that the prefrontal cortex is smaller. It means that the hippocampus is smaller. It means the amygdala is on high alert, which puts a person with improper attachment in an almost constant stage of fight, flight, or freeze. So this early attachment is very important for people to be able to then have healthy, intimate relationships later on in their life.
Okay. And will you just explain the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, what you're saying to the general public who may not understand those three parts of the brain?
So the way I look at it is this, okay, and I've been studying pretty much a man named Stephen Porges who talks about the polyvagal theory.
Mm-hmm.
And what the brain is designed to do, like I said earlier, is to keep us alive. And what we then have is we have three components to the brain. We have a social engagement system, which is basically our prefrontal cortex, our ability to connect with other people. It's our ability to think rationally, be in the present moment, access whether or not we're safe. It's basically where connection happens. Then the next step after that, if the social engagement system is not working correctly, what happens
right.
then is in our sympathetic nervous system comes online, and that's our fight or flight system. When that continues, and if that fails to protect us from threat, then we go into a freeze response. Okay, so what I'm talking about here is that the prefrontal cortex is where we're able to connect with other people and be social in the world. And when I
uh-huh.
said, when I talked about the hippocampus and the amygdala, I'm talking about the limbic brain. So that's the brain that goes on high alert when we are threatened. What studies have shown is that people with low attachment or damaged attachment, their amygdala is constantly on. In other words, there's no braking system for it. So that would make a lot of sense for people who are in this fight, flight, or freeze state all the time, needing some type of relief, whether it be alcohol, drugs, or sexual activity to calm down. It's a, you know, the addiction becomes a way to escape and manage pain.
Okay, so then obviously there are some ways to recircuit the brain. And so talk a little bit about how do you go about doing that?
Well, the recircuiting the brain, I don't know if I would call it recircuiting the brain, I because I'm not a brain scientist, but
uh-huh.
what I would call it is that if we're able to get in and first of all find out where the attachment trauma came from, and the person starts to see that, you know, their life was less than optimal to begin with, it reduces their shame quite a bit. After a person has a good length of sobriety from sexually acting out or from alcohol or drugs or other things, then we can start working on being able to reattach, okay? So we have to learn attachment as we go along. That in and itself is what we're talking about, you know, when you say we're rewiring the brain. The people who are in recovery and learning how to, in essence, be vulnerable and to start trusting people, the things that should have happened in early attachment, then they're able to stay sober and they're also able to start connecting with other people in healthy ways.
Okay, so now when you say early attachment, again, for people that may not know what that term really means, can you describe some ways that we attach as infants and children that provide the foundation for good, healthy relationships?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the most important thing, and what I tell all my patients and what all of my patients are lacking, is the ability to understand, access, and express their emotions. It's almost like this was left out. And in attachment, what happens is you're bonding with a primary caregiver, and they're kind of teaching you slowly through interaction how to be a human being. So they're teaching you how to understand your emotions. They're teaching you how to access them. They're definitely validating them, whether they be anger, sadness, fear, or joy. And they're teaching them how to properly express them, but they're also teaching them how to resolve these emotions. Now, the people that I work with don't have that ability. They were never taught. They were taught that emotions were bad, that emotions shouldn't be expressed. And so what they did, they ended up stuffing all their emotions or ignoring them or trying to get away from them. That causes a tremendous amount of pain in an individual if you can't express your emotions, because we're human beings and we're supposed to be able to express our emotions. So what the person does instead is they find a way to express all emotions at one time, or to deal with the emotions. So they find alcohol, they find drugs, and in particular, they find sexual activity. And this gives them a temporary relief from the pressure that's involved with all these stuffed emotions, but it never really solves the problem, and they're never really able to connect with other people because they're not truly expressing their emotions in an authentic way.
Okay, that totally makes sense. So now, tell me why sex addiction is such a controversial topic, especially based on the fact that you see it as being an intimacy disorder and an attachment issue.
Well, I really think that, that sex addiction brings up images of people that are less than savory in our society. And, you know, when we think of a sex addict, we think of someone wearing a trench coat or things like that. Sexuality is also a very personal thing for people. So it's difficult to talk about. And when we talk about being addicted to sex, then what we're looking at is we're feeling the shame and the guilt and remorse that go along with the term sexual addiction. But I've been reading all the studies and things like that, whether or not sex addiction actually exists, and it's controversial right now. But in my opinion, sex is addiction is a term that is used as a pattern or a relief time and time again, despite adverse consequences. And the person is therefore not in control of their behavior. And I don't know of any other word other than addiction that fits that quite as well.
Okay, so, we know that sex addiction is the outward manifestation of the problem. And
yes.
So if you peel away the layers, you're saying that the attachment wounds that one experienced where, they weren't allowed to share their feelings, they never felt safe, provided a situation whereby sexual addiction medicates those wounds.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it. So then explain why sex addiction can be called an intimacy disorder, and do you believe that's true?
I do believe it's true. And, you know, what I started saying is that intimacy disorder is just an adult manifestation of attachment disorder. It means we can't connect with other people in a healthy, long-term way. When I talk to my patients at first and I say to them, you know, you've never been able to connect, they say, well, that's not true. I've been able to connect. In fact, I'm married, and a person who's married has to be able to connect. But as we talk, they find out that they're not able to stay connected. Okay, so they can connect for brief moments, and they're not connecting in an authentic way because the partner never knows of the person's addiction beforehand. It's very rare for a couple to discuss, you know, unless a person's in recovery, he or she doesn't usually tell their future partner that they're dealing with a sex addiction problem. So when we're looking at this, it's a hidden behavior, and there can't be true intimacy when there's parts of us that are hidden from our partner.
Okay, that totally makes sense. And yet that's where the partners feel so betrayed, because they're like, how did I attract this into my life? I thought I was involved with somebody who is healthy, and it feels like a bait and switch, like the person
exactly.
I was with is not the person that I married or that I fell in love with. And now they not only feel betrayed from their partner, but they also feel betrayed by themselves, because they realize that partially they fell in love with an illusion and not the real meal deal.
Yes, and that's incredibly painful. That's a betrayal trauma, and that's very difficult to get over. You know, we sign up in our relationships with people who were trusting to be authentic. And in the sex addicts world, there's so much shame and so much hiding that this secret compartmentalized life is usually never brought to the surface until they're caught doing something by the partner.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's the double whammy there, that obviously they can't believe that their partner would betray them like that. And, of course, not being able to trust their partner nor themselves, that's going to interfere with any potentiality for intimacy from a partner standpoint, let alone the sex addict. So, now, you said this is a brain condition, and I'm kind of curious. Sexually addictive behaviors are really just a response to the inability to connect in a healthy way. Can you say a little bit more about that and shame and how an addict really feels?
Well, you know, I can talk about that professionally, and I can talk about that personally, and that the addict feels a tremendous sense of worthlessness, the inability to, you know, this inability for intimacy has been lifelong. And we know that at our deepest level, that, you know, we cannot connect with other people, and it makes us feel very ashamed and very, very worthless. So we hide these activities, which, by the way, causes us to prove that we're full of shame and that we have feelings of worthlessness because we're cheating on our spouses and our partners. So it just really takes a toll on the person. And then once it's discovered that the amount of shame that comes out all at once is huge. So the person who really has the intimacy disorder, at their core, they feel worthless, feel shamed, They feel inadequate, hopeless, and helpless. I don't know if I really got to your question there.
Oh, no, I absolutely think you did. And obviously you sharing your own personal situation allows our listeners to understand that not only are you a good clinician, but that you get it. You've been there, and you've overcome that. So how was it that you overcame your sexual addiction and recovered from it?
Well, you know, basically what I did, I had a history of recovery from alcoholism as well. So I was savvy to how to recover from an addiction. And sex addiction wasn't that much different from my alcoholism, except I think that in my sex addiction, it was much more shameful to admit that I had the problem, the alcoholism. I mean, if I tell people I have 28 years of active recovery from alcoholism, they congratulate me. If I tell them I have, you know, 6.5 years of successful recovery from sex addiction, they kind of give me a strange look. Again, it's that we don't know what this means and, you know, what were you doing and those types of things. So the way I did it is I went to an inpatient treatment center for 35 days, and I immediately got hooked up with 12-step programs for sex addiction. And I've been going to those regularly since, you know, I came into recovery from my own sex addiction.
Okay, and so then what tools, what recovery tools did you use, and what recovery tools do you encourage your clients to use as you're working with attachment and intimacy, which obviously is the foundation for the sexual addiction?
I think the main focus here is that authenticity is number one in recovery from sexual addiction. We can't be afraid of our pasts. We can't give in to shame and not talk about, you know, our problems with our sexuality. The more we're authentic and the more people that we're able to connect with who are also recovering or who are, you know, being trained in this field or, you know, therapists, safe people to talk to about our own problems with this, the more authentic we become and the less we feel shame about our old behaviors. So my patients, I really work with them on being authentic, and that includes doing a disclosure at some point with their wives about how their sex addiction formed and what they did while they were in their addiction, and in particular, you know, what they had done while they were in partnership with this other person. And I think that telling your own story and being honest about who you are is probably the cornerstone of sex addiction recovery. Now, I run 5 different groups at my treatment center right now for sexual addiction. And basically the small group experience, treatment experience is so beneficial, and other people coming in and getting a real intimate view of, you know, telling their story, telling their secrets, being authentic with other people so they get to practice before they go out, and then they can be authentic with other people as well.
Well, 100%. I am talking with Dr. Michael Barta. He's a CSAT out of Boulder, Colorado, and he is the founding director of the Colorado Sexual Recovery Center. And is there a website or a phone number if people would like to attend an intensive that they could contact you?
Absolutely. So the website is www.co, and then sexualrecovery.com. And the phone number for our organization is 303-819-4073.
Okay, and that's really important because obviously you are the founding director of this center and you have made it your mission to provide intensives as well as group mm-hmm. work and individual, family, and marital. So when you're working with somebody and, you know, their behavior is out of control, what do you think is oftentimes the most helpful? Would you encourage somebody to work with you individually? Would you put them in group? Or would you send them to an intensive to get that basic foundation?
Well, what I try to do, and, you know, there's people coming to me from all over the United States, which is very blessed, because I run, you know, a very short program. I have a 2, 3, or 5-day program. And basically, it's for a person to come in, and hopefully they bring their partner or their spouse, and we get to the core of the problem real quickly. I mean, I work on a trauma base, and we find out what happened early in the person's life that may have set them up for this problem. That way we can understand, you know, what got them to start acting out, and we also get a really good idea of the timeline that's happening. When the partner attends the intensive as well, he or she really gets to understand that this problem is a manifestation of early trauma, and it helps the partner to depersonalize their husband or wife's behavior, their sexual behavior. We also do a component during the two or three or five-day intensive specifically for the partner and helping her understand what sex addiction is, but also how she's been traumatized as a result from it. And we really give her a voice in the program so that her husband can start seeing the damage that, or the husband or wife can start seeing the damage that they've caused and start being accountable to repair that damage.
Well, that makes sense. Now, you know, you're talking damage, but the bottom line for so many partners is, am I ever going to heal? And can my partner ever learn how to be intimate? So what do you think? Can a sex addict ever learn how to be intimate?
Absolutely. And it takes a great deal of work. So when I talk about finding out these early attachment wounds, and like I said early on in the broadcast, that they really cause brain damage, attachment improper or unhealthy attachment is actually experienced as a trauma to the brain. And what we do at our treatment center is we do a lot of trauma work. So we use EMDR, we use brain spotting, which are two trauma protocols. We use DBT work, and we use internal family systems. This is to help the person heal from the early trauma. What we found is that when we start healing the early trauma, the person is much more able to connect because they're living more in the present moment. They're not being triggered by early events that cause them pain. So they're able to handle their emotions a lot better within the relationship.
Okay, and those three techniques again were brain spotting,
brain spotting, which is it's a takeoff on EMDR, okay, so eye movement reprocessing and desensitization, and the other one we use is dialectical behavioral therapy, which really helps the person learn how to handle their own emotions.
Okay, so I know what EMDR is, as I do that also. Brain spotting, tell us a little bit more about that. Never on this show have we talked about that technique.
Well, David Grand is the person that that discovered brain spotting, and basically he was an EMDR practitioner, and he noticed that when he was using his fingers or a wand to do the eye movement back and forth, he would notice that people would stick at one specific point. And what he found out was that if he just had them focus on that one point while recalling the trauma that happened, the trauma started to subside a lot faster. So EMDR is a really good, I'm sorry, brain spotting is a really good avenue to use when people's trauma is so severe that EMDR seems like it's too intrusive. So, you know, I know your listeners don't know a lot about this. Some of them do. But EMDR can be a very invasive protocol, and it requires a lot of resourcing or the ability to be able to handle some trauma in order to process more, where brain spotting is, I call it EMDR light, because it's not invasive. People respond to it very quickly, and if there's a lot of trauma, say a partner just finds out and EMDR is too much for him or her to handle, then we would start her out with the brain spotting. And if that's too much to handle, then we start them out with the dialectical behavioral therapy, because that's just a technique we use so that the person is able to really start standing in their own emotion instead of getting too overwhelmed and they can't move. I hope that was an adequate description.
No, that absolutely helped to describe that technique, and that's very interesting, and I'll remember that, EMDR light. Okay. Now, you know, we oftentimes use EMDR and brain spotting to deal with the trauma that the addict feels, you know, when they're stuck in that cycle of unhealthy sexual behavior. So can you talk a little bit about how trauma keeps the addict stuck, keeps them from moving forward?
Well, the problem with trauma is this. Once it happens, it stays in there until we do some work with it, such as the EMDR or the brain spotting or the DBT. So the way I like to explain it is that every time a person interacts with another individual after the trauma, it's also going to be pulling up the feelings and the sensations and the thoughts and the beliefs that the trauma created. So I tell my patients, I say, until the trauma is removed, you're not really ever living in the present moment. And I don't know how a sex addict could have chosen any better way to blow up intimacy than they did, but they did. So they're out acting out, their partner finds out, and then they want their partner to be close to them. Well, that doesn't happen right away. So what has to happen is that the addict has to learn skills to be able to handle his or her own emotions while living with someone who's very, very angry and hurt and not taking it personally. so that they're able to show up and be accountable for the partner, even though they're, you know, they've experienced their own trauma early on. So when I say that I want to work with the trauma to be able to help partner or help the addict through this, it takes away the earlier events that were causing them to not want to be close in the first place. Is that helpful to you?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Okay, so then simple bonding with a partner can really seem scary and threatening to the brain. And so not only are we dealing with normal human behavior based on trauma, but we're also dealing with the typical signals the brain gets about that, are we not?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So in some ways, partner, that becomes the way of escape so that one doesn't have to feel that pain or move forward and take those risks and be vulnerable.
Yeah, because what I think the biggest problem with the non-attached individual is that they never felt validated. So they have a really hard time risking connection with other people because their first connections were very painful.
Oh, that totally makes sense. And some of the greatest pain that somebody could experience early on is not getting the nurturance they need from their mother and father, or being abused physically, sexually, emotionally as a child. What other forms of trauma do children experience?
Well, I think you just named it. I mean, you know, there's the physical, there's the sexual, there's the emotional. Quite a few of my patients have also experienced spiritual abuse, where they were made to believe a certain way or follow a particular order that mm-hmm. was very shaming and demeaning to them. So mm-hmm. that their authentic selves were, you know, basically told that they were wrong. And when that becomes our, you know, foundation of who we are, then it's really hard to take risk after that because we never feel like we're worthy.
Okay. So then what I hear you saying is that there is hope for addicts and their partners for intimacy, that they can learn to be close, and that trauma work is the cornerstone of any addiction work. And so what would you say your main message of hope to addicts and partners is?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and I have a lot of partners, they ask me, you know, how do I differ from these people that my husband was acting out with? And I'm just using a male model here. But they say, how do I differ from these, in other words, these prostitutes, these massage parlor women, the women on pornography, how do I differ from them? And what I've really seen is that the addict chooses the partner to really fight upon with and to work out their early experiences. And the addict chooses the pornography, the prostitutes, the massage parlors, and the affairs to escape from the early work he or she needs to work out. So they're two entirely different things. One is an actual attempt to bond, and one's an attempt to escape. And I really see that happening with the men and the women who come into our program who really want to recover and make their marriages work. So I think that shows a lot of hope.
Well, Well, absolutely. And, you know, again, I'm talking with Dr. Michael Barta, and he works with attachment disorders and intimacy disorders and sexual addiction. And he's sharing with us there is a lot of hope, strength, and recovery that can occur. It's a long, slow process, but actually partners can learn to be close when they do their own trauma work. So one more time, Dr. Barta, before we leave, would you give your website and your phone number so that people can contact you if they have more questions?
Sure. My website is www.cosexualrecovery.com. And my phone number is 303-819-4073.
Okay, and again, I so appreciate the work you're doing because truly, without doing attachment and trauma work, there is, I don't want to say there's very little hope, but you've got to be able to do that really hard foundational childhood, you know, child trauma, family of origin work to get healthy again. Because obviously sexual addiction is a maladaptive coping mechanism for the trauma that one's experienced. And you've shared with us how to go about that, whether it be individual, group, intensives, even treatment centers. Is there anything you'd like to add before we end for tonight?
I really appreciate it, Carol, for you having me on and for allowing me to explain this a little bit. And just that I'm really excited that there's people doing this work, especially people like you are getting the word out to a lot of people, that there is a lot of hope. There is a lot of recovery going on right now, and it's just going to keep growing.
Absolutely. We're getting more and more experts in the field, and we're all working together. We're part of two major organizations between ITAP and SASH. It is exciting, and again, you work with some of the finest and brightest because you supervise people and get them to that next level.
Absolutely.
So for people that don't understand, we are part of an organization where once we've gotten our certification, we really have the foundational skills to help people, and Dr. Barta helps us to get to that place. So, Dr. Barta, I thank you so much for explaining this. You've made it very understandable, and I wish you continued success with your program, with your clients, and with your own life. You're an inspiration.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. So I hope that you'll access his website, get some of the reading materials that he has available, and if you just don't feel safe enough to increase your closeness with a partner, if you don't feel like you've done your childhood trauma work, then I highly recommend his intensive programming because truly it can catapult you to that next stage of your life where you can begin to do the difficult partner work. You are listening to Carol Jorgensen-Cheats. Hi, I'm Carol the Coach, and this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. We get together every Monday night at 9 o'clock, and oftentimes we get to interview the experts. So I look forward to seeing you next week, and as I say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you next week. Have a good one.